The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavinaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandigedra Devalagam.
Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse.
Etaṃ santaṃ etaṃ panitaṃ yadidaṃ sabba saṅkhāra samatho sabbhūpadhi paṭiṣaggo tannakkhayo virāgo nirodho nibbāna. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, retirement, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 32nd sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In the course of our last sermon, we took up the position that the 7 groups of doctrinal categories, collectively known as the 37 participative factors of enlightenment, follow an extremely practical and systematic order of arrangement. By way of proof, we discussed at some length the inner consistency evident within each group and the way the different groups are related to each other. So far, we have pointed out how the setting up of mindfulness through the 4 foundations of mindfulness serves as a solid basis for the 4 ways of putting forth energy by the 4 right endeavors, and how the progressive stages in putting forth energy outlined by the 4 right endeavors give rise to the 4 bases for success. It was while discussing the way in which the 4 bases for success are helpful in arousing the 5 faculties like faith that we had to stop our last sermon. It should be sufficiently clear after our discussion the other day that the 4 factors, desire, energy, determination and investigation, could be made the base for success in any venture. The 5 faculties, however, are directly relevant to Nibbana. That is why faith is given pride of place among the faculties. Saddhindriya, or the faculty of faith, takes the lead, which is obviously related to Chanda, desire or interest. But the element of faith in Saddhindriya is defined at a higher level. In this context, it is reckoned as the firm faith characteristic of the streamlina. Then comes the faculty of energy, viriyindriya. Though apparently it is yet another occurrence of the term virya, in this context, it is that element of energy, weathered and reinforced by its fourfold application as a base for success, iddhipada. As for samadhi or concentration, we already came across the terms chanda samadhi, Virya Samadhi, Chitta Samadhi and Vimamsa Samadhi in the description of the development of the basis for success. The concentration meant by Samadhi in that context is actually a one-pointedness of the mind, Chitta Ekagata, which could be made the basis for arousing energy. But the level of concentration envisaged by the concentration faculty Samadhi in real is of a higher grade as far as its potential is concerned. It is defined as the first 4 jhanas, based on which one can develop insight and attain Nibbana. In fact, there is a statement to that effect. Ida bhikkhavi arya savako vasagga arammanam karitva labhati samadhi labhati chittase ekagata. Hearing monks, a noble disciple gains concentration, gains one-pointedness of mind, having made the release of Nibbana, its object. The term Vasagga connotes Nibbana as a giving up or relinquishment. So the concentration faculty is that concentration which is directed towards Nibbana. Similarly, the wisdom faculty as defined up here is of the highest degree, pertaining to the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Sometimes it is called the noble penetrative wisdom of rise and fall. Udayathagamini panya arya nibbedika. By implication, it is equivalent to the factor called vimamsa, investigation, we came across in our discussion of the basis processes. As a faculty, it comes out full-fledged in the guise of wisdom. The mindfulness faculty, which stands in the middle, fulfills a very important function. Now, in the context of the four foundations of mindfulness, the role of mindfulness is that simple task of being aware of the appropriate object presented to it. But here in this domain of faculties, mindfulness has attained lordship and fulfills an important function. It maintains the balance between the two sets of pairwise faculties by equalizing faith with wisdom and energy with concentration. This function of balancing of faculties, which mindfulness fulfills, has a special practical value. To one who is striving for Nibbana, balancing of faculties could sometimes be an intricate problem, since it is more easily said than done. In order to unravel this problem, let us take up the simile of the rock we employed the other day. We discussed the question of toppling the rock as an illustration to understand the various stages in the fourfold right endeavor. We distinguished the five stages in putting forth effort in the phrase Chandang Janeti, Vayamati, Viryang Arbhati, Chittang Pagganhati, Padahati with the help of that illustration. Out of these stages, the last one represented by the word Padahati shows the climax. Padhana o endeavor is the highest grade of effort. Even verbally, it implies something like toppling a rock, which requires a high degree of momentum. This momentum has to be built up mindfully and gradually. That rock in our illustration was levered up with great difficulty. After it was levered up, there came that dangerous situation when it threatened to roll back. It called for that supreme purposeful effort, which required the zeal of self-sacrifice. That zealous endeavor is made at the risk of one's body and life. But even there, one has to be cautious and mindful. If excessive energy is applied in that last heave, one would be thrown off head over heels after the rock. If insufficient energy is applied, the rock would roll back and one would get crushed. That is why a balancing is needed before the last spurt. Right endeavor has to be preceded by balancing. It is this preliminary balancing that finds mention in a certain highly significant statement in the Chanki Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, where we are told how a person arouses faith in the Dhamma and gradually develops it and puts forth effort and endeavor and attains Nibbana. To quote the relevant section of that long sentence, Chanda jato usahati, usahitva tuleti, tulayitva padahati, paitatto samano, kaina cheva paramasaccham sachikaroti, panya chenam ativijjo pasati. Having aroused the desire or keen interest, he strives. Having strived, he balances. Having balanced or equalized, he endeavors, and with that endeavor he realizes the highest truth by his body and penetrates into it with wisdom. Unfortunately, the key word here, tulayati or tuleti, is explained in a different way in the commentary. It is interpreted as a reference to contemplation on insight. Anicca adivasena tireti, a judges as impermanent, etc. But if we examine the word within the context here, as it occurs between ussahati, strives, literally bearing up or enduring, and padahati, endeavors, the obvious meaning is equalizing or balancing. Tuliti has connotations of weighing and judging. And one who strives to lift up a rock needs to know how heavy it is and how much effort is required to topple it. By merely looking at the rock, without trying to lift it up, one cannot say how much effort is needed to topple it. One has to put one's shoulder to it. In fact, the word usahati is suggestive of enduring effort with which one bears up. Sometimes the Buddha uses the term usolhi to designate that steadily enduring effort, literally the bearing up. A clear instance of the occurrence of this term in this sense can be found among the eights of the Anguttara Nikaya in a discourse on the recollection of death, Maranasati. The sutta is an exhortation to the monks to make use of the recollection of death, to reflect on one's unskillful mental states daily, in the morning and in the evening, with a view to strengthen one's determination to abandon them. For instance, we find the following exhortation. Sace bhikkave bhikkhu paccivekkhamano evam pajanati athime papaka akusala dhamma appahina yeme asu ratin karan karunta santrayati tena bhikkhave bhikkhuna tesam eva papakanam akusalanam dhammanam phanaya adhimatto chando cha vayamo cha usaho cha usoli cha appativani cha sati cha sampajanyan cha karan. If monks, upon reflection, a monk understands, there are in me unabandoned, evil, unskillful states, which could spell the danger to me. If I die today, then monks, for the abandonment of those very evil, unskillful states, that monk should arouse a high degree of desire, effort, striving, enduring effort, unremitting effort, mindfulness, and full awareness. The sequence of terms, chando, vayamo, usaho, usoli, appativani, sati, and sampajanya, is particularly significant in this long sentence. Chanda is that desire to abandon evil and unskillful state. Vayama is the initial effort. Usaha is literally putting the shoulder to the task. Usoli is bearing it up with endurance. Appativani is unshrinking effort or unremitting effort. Sati is that mindfulness and sampajanya, that full awareness which are indispensable in this sustained unremitting endeavor. If a better illustration is needed to clarify the idea of balancing prior to the final endeavor, we may take the case of lifting a log of wood. Here we have an actual lifting up or putting one's shoulder to it. Without lifting up a log of wood and putting one's shoulder to it, one cannot get to know the art of balancing. If, for instance, the log of wood is thick at one end and thin at the other end, one cannot locate the center of gravity at a glance. So one puts one's shoulder to one end and goes on lifting it up. It is when one reaches the center of gravity that one is able to balance it on one's shoulder and take it away. It is because we are looking at this question of balancing of faculties from a practical point of view that we made this detour in explanation. So then, the mindfulness faculty is also performing a very important function among these faculties. From the Saddha Sutta we quoted the other day, we could see that there is also a gradual arrangement in this group of five faculties.
That is to say,
in a person with faith, energy arises. One who is energetic is keen on developing mindfulness. In one who is mindful, concentration grows. And one who has concentration attains wisdom. This gradual arrangement becomes all the more meaningful since the faculty of wisdom is declared the chief among the faculties.
In the Indriya Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya,
the Buddha gives a number of similes to show that the wisdom faculty is supreme in this group. Just as the lion is supreme among animals, and the footprint of the elephant is the biggest of all footprints, the wisdom faculty is supreme among faculties.
The Buddha even goes on to point out that until the wisdom faculty steps in,
the other four faculties do not get established. This he makes clear by the simile of the gabled wall in the Mallika Sutta of the Indriya Samyutta. Just as monks in a gabled hall, so long as the roof peak has not been raised, the rafters are not conjoined, the rafters are not held in place. Even so, as long as the noble knowledge has not arisen in a noble disciple, the four faculties are not conjoined, the four faculties are not held in place.
Until one becomes a stream winner, the five faculties do not get established in him, since the wisdom faculty is so integral.
At least one has to be on the path to attaining the fruit of the stream winner. It is said that the five faculties are to be found only in the eight noble persons. The four treading on the path to the four fruits and the four who have attained the fruits of the path. Chattaroja patipanna, chattaroja phaletita. In others, they are weak and not properly harnessed. It is in the arahant that the wisdom faculty is found in its strongest form. In the other grades of supramundane attainment, they are weaker by degrees. The lowest grade is the one treading the path to stream winning. In the worldling, they are not at all to be found in any way. Sabbena sabbang, sabbata sabbang natti.
Next comes the group of five powers.
As to their function, some explanation might be necessary, though it seems simple enough. As we have already mentioned, the term Indriya connotes kingship or lordship. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration and wisdom were elevated to the position of a king or lord.
They have attained sovereignty,
so now they are exercising their power. For what purpose? To put down the evil, unskillful mental states that arise in revolt against Nibbana. The noble disciple uses the same faculties as powers to fight out the hindrances and break the fetters. That is why among the participative factors of enlightenment, they are represented as powers by virtue of their special function. Then we come to the category called seven factors of enlightenment. A high degree of importance is attached to this particular group. It has an orderly arrangement. The constituents are sati, mindfulness, dhamma vichaya, investigation of states, virya, energy,
piti, joy,
passaddhi, calmness, samadhi, concentration, pekkha, equanimity. In this group of seven, mindfulness takes precedence. In fact, the arrangement resembles the mobilization for winning that freedom of Nibbana. The Bodhanga, factors of enlightenment, are so called because they are conducive to enlightenment. Bodhaya Sangvattanti. Sati leads the way and at the same time marshals the squad.
Three members of the group, namely Dhammavichaya, Virya and Preeti, are by nature restless, while the other three, Passaddhi, Samadhi and Upekkha, are rather slack. They have to be marshalled and properly aligned. And Sati comes to the forefront for that purpose. At the same time, one can discern an orderly arrangement within this group. Right from the stage of the four foundations of mindfulness, the same term Sati seems to occur down the line, but its function differs in different contexts. Now in this context, it is specifically called a bodhjhanga, a factor of enlightenment. The phrase sati sambodhyangam bhaveti, he develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, is directly used with reference to it here. When one develops a particular meditation subject, whether it be mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, or even one of the four divine abidings of loving kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, altruistic joy, mudita, or equanimity, upekkha, one can arouse these enlightenment factors. That is why we come across Indriya Samyutta, for instance, such statements as the following.
Ito bhikkhave bhikkhu mitta sahagatam sati sambodhyangam bhaveti. Viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, vasagga parinam.
Herein monks, a monk develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, imbued with loving kindness, based upon seclusion, dispassion and cessation, maturing in release. All the four terms, viveka, seclusion, viraga, dispassion, nirodha, cessation, and vasagga, release, are suggestive of nibbana. So, satsambodhanga implies the development of mindfulness as an enlightenment factor directed towards the attainment of nibbana.
What follows in the wake of the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, once it is aroused, is the enlightenment factor of investigation of states, Dhammavichaya Sambodhyanga, which in fact is the function it fulfills. For instance, in the Ananda Sutta, we read, so tatha sato viharanto tang dhammang panyaya pavichinati pavicharati parivimang sangapati. Dwelling thus mindfully, he investigates that mental state with wisdom, goes over it mentally, and makes an examination of it. The mental state refers to the particular subject of meditation, and by investigating it with wisdom, and mentally going over it and examining it, the meditator arouses energy. So from this enlightenment factor, one draws inspiration and arouses energy. It is also conducive to the development of wisdom. This enlightenment factor of investigation of states gives rise to the enlightenment factor of energy, since the mental activity implied by it keeps him wakeful and alert, as the phrase aradhaṃ hoti viryaṃ asalli, energy stirred up and not inert, implies. To one who has stirred up energy, there arises a joy of the spiritual type, aradhavirasa upajati piti niramisa. Of one who is joyful in mind, the body also calms down. Piti manasa kayo pipasambhati, and so too the mind. Chittam pipasambhati. The mind of one who is calm in body and blissful gets concentrated. Pasadde kaya sa sukhino chittam samadhi. So now, the enlightenment factor of concentration has also come up. What comes after the enlightenment factor of concentration is the enlightenment factor of equanimity. About it is said, so tatha samahitam cittam sadhukam ajupittita hoti. He rightly looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated. Once the mind is concentrated, there is no need to struggle or strive. With equanimity, one has to keep watch and ward over it. As an enlightenment factor, equanimity can be valued from another angle. It is the proper basis for the knowledge of things as they are, yathābhūta-ñāṇa.
The neutrality that goes with equanimity not only stabilizes concentration, but also makes one receptive to the knowledge of things as they are. So here we have the seven factors conducive to enlightenment. What comes next as the last of the seven groups is the Noble Eightfold Path, Aryo Attangiko Maggu, which is reckoned as the highest among them. There is some speciality even in the naming of this group. All the other groups show a plural ending, Chattaro Satipatthana, Chattaro Sammappadhana, Chattaro Iddhipada, Panchindriyani, Panchabalani, Sattabodhanga, but this group has a singular ending, Aryo Attangiko Maggo. The collective sense is suggestive of the fact that this is the Magga Samadhi, the path concentration. The Noble Eightfold Path is actually the presentation of that concentration of the supramundane path with its constituents. The singular ending is therefore understandable. This fact comes to light particularly in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. It is a discourse that brings out a special analysis of the Noble Eightfold Path. There the Buddha explains to the monk, the noble right concentration with its supportive conditions and requisite factors. Katamocha bhikkave aryo samma samadhi saupaniso saparikkharo. Suyathidam samma ditti samma sankappo samma vacha samma kammanto samma ajiyo samma vayamo samma sati. Yākho bhikkave imehi sattahangehi citta sekagyata parikkhata ayam bucchati bhikkave aryo samma samadhi saupaniso itipi saparikkharo itipi. What monks is noble right concentration with its supports and requisites. That is right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, and right mindfulness. That unification of mind equipped with these seven factors is called noble right concentration with its supports and requisites. So right concentration itself is the path. The singular number is used to denote the fact that it is accompanied by the requisite factors. Otherwise the plural magganga factors of the path could have been used to name this category. The unitary notion has a significance of its own. It is suggestive of the fact that here we have a unification of all the forces built up by the participative factors of enlightenment. In this discourse, the Buddha comes out with an explanation of certain other important aspects of this Noble Eightfold Path. The fact that right view takes precedence is emphatically stated several times. Tatra bhikkhave sammāditthi pubbangama. Therein monks' right view leads the way. It is also noteworthy that right view is declared as twofold. Sammāditthiṃ paham duyam vadam. Even right view, I say, is twofold. Tibhikave sammaditti sasava punya bhagya upadive pakka. Atibhikave sammaditti ariyana sava lokuttara magganga. There is right view monks that is affected by influxes on the side of merit and maturing into assets. And there is right view monks that is noble, influx free, supramundane, a factor of the path. The first type of right view, which is affected by influxes on the side of merit and ripening in assets, is the one often met with in general in the analysis of the Noble Eightfold Path, namely the ten-factored right view. It is known as the right view which takes kamma as one's own, kamma sakata sammadit. The standard definition of it runs as follows. Ati dinnang, ati yethang, ati yotang, ati sukata dukkataanang, kammanang, phalang vipako, ati ayang loko, ati paro loko, ati mata, ati pita, අත්ති සත්තා උපපාතිකා අත්ති ලෝකයේ සමන බ්‍රාහ්මණා සම්මග්ගතා සම්මා පටිපන්නා යේ ඉමංච ලෝකං පරංච ලෝකං සයං අභිඤ්ඤා සච්චිකත්වා පවේදෙන්ති. There is an effectiveness in what is given, what is offered, and what is sacrificed. There is fruit and result of good and bad deeds. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are beings who are reborn spontaneously. There are in the world rightly treading and rightly practicing recluses and brahmins who have realized by themselves, by direct knowledge, and declare this world and the other world. This right view is still within fluxes. It is on the side of merits and is productive of samsaric assets. About this right view, this discourse has very little to say. In this sutta, the greater attention is focused on that right view which is noble, influx-free, supramundane, and constitutes a factor of the path. It is explained as the right view that comes up at the supramundane path moment. It is noble, arya, influx-free, anasava, and conducive to transcendence of the world, lokuttara. It is defined as follows.
Yākho bhikkave arya cittas, anasava cittas, arya magga samangino, අරිය මග්ගං භාවයතෝ පඤ්ඤා පඤ්ඤේන්ද්‍රියං පඤ්ඤාබලං ධම්ම විචේ සම්බුද්ධංගෝ සම්මාදිට්ඨි මග්ගංගා අයං භික්ඛවේ සම්මාදිට්ඨි අරියා අනාසවා ලෝකුත්තරා මග්ගංගා.
Monks, that wisdom, that faculty of wisdom, that power of wisdom, that investigation of states, enlightenment factor, that path factor of right view, in one whose mind is noble, whose mind is influx-free, who has the noble path and is developing the noble path, that is the right view which is noble, influx-free, and supramundane, a factor of the path. All these synonymous terms are indicative of that wisdom directed towards Nibbana in that noble disciple. They are representative of the element of wisdom maintained from the faculty state upwards in his systematic development of the enlightenment factors. It is also noteworthy that in connection with the supramundane aspect of the path factors, four significant qualifying terms are always cited, as for instance in the following reference to right view.
Iddha bhikkhave bhikkhu sammādittiṃ bhāveti vivekanisitaṃ virāganisitaṃ nirodhanisitaṃ Vasagga Parinami. Herein monks, a monk develops right view, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. This is the higher grade of right view, which aims at Nibbana.
It implies the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths, that noble wisdom which sees the rise and fall, Udayatthagami Nibbana. The line of synonymous terms quoted above clearly indicates that the Noble Eightfold Path contains within it all the faculties, powers and enlightenment factors so far developed. This is not a mere citation of apparent synonyms for an academic purpose. It brings out the fact that at the path moment, the essence of all the wisdom that systematically got developed through the five faculties, the five powers and the seven enlightenment factors surfaces in the noble disciple to effect the final breakthrough. The twofold definition given by the Buddha is common to the first five factors of the path. Right view, right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. That is to say, all these factors have an aspect that can be called tinged with influxes, sa-asava, on the side of merit, punya bhagya, and productive of samsaric assets, upadivepakka, as well as an aspect that deserves to be called noble, arya, influx-free, anasava, supramundane, lokuttara, a constituent factor of the path, maggang. The usual definition of the Noble Eightfold Path is well known. A question might arise as to the part played by right speech, right action, and right livelihood at the arising of the supramundane path. They are all at the path moment is described as an abstinence from the four kinds of verbal misconduct, an abstinence from the three kinds of bodily misconduct, and an abstinence from wrong livelihood. The element of abstinence therein implied is conveyed by such terms as arati, virati, pati virati, veramani, desisting from, abstaining, refraining, abstinence. It is the very thought of abstaining that represents the three factors at the path moment and not their physical counterparts. That is to say, the act of refraining has already been accomplished. So then, we are concerned only with the other five factors of the path. Out of them, three factors are highlighted as running around and circling around each of these five for the purpose of their fulfillment, namely, right view, right effort, and right mindfulness. This running around and circling around conveyed by the two terms, anuparidhavanti and anuparivattanti, is extremely peculiar in this context. The role of these three states might be difficult for one to understand. Perhaps, as an illustration, we may take the case of a VIP, a very important person, being conducted through a crowd with much pomp. One ushers him in with his vanguard. Another brings up the rear with his bandwagon, while yet another is at hand as the bodyguard cum attendant. So also at the path moment, right view shows the way, right effort gives the boost, while right mindfulness attends at hand. These security forces keep the wrong side mitcha of the path factors in check. The precedence of right view is a salient feature of the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha makes special mention of it, pointing out at the same time the inner consistency of its internal arrangement. Tatra bhikkave sammadhi tipubbangama hoti. Katanca bhikkave sammadhi tipubbangama hoti. Sammadhitthisa bhikkave samma sankappo pahoti. Samma sankappas samma vacha pahoti. Samma vachasya samma kammanto pahoti. සම්මා කම්මන්තස සම්මා ආජීවෝ පහෝති. සම්මා ආජීවස සම්මා වායාමෝ පහෝති. සම්මා වායාමස සම්මා සති පහෝති. සම්මා සතිස සම්මා සමාධි පහෝති. සම්මා සමාධිස සම්මා ඥානං පහෝති. සම්මා ඥානස සම්මා විමුක්ති පහෝති. ඉති කෝ භික්ඛවේ අට්ඨංග සමන්නාගතෝ සේකෝ පාටිපදෝ දසංග සමන්නාගතෝ අරහා හෝති. Therein, monks, right view comes first. And how, monks, does right view come first? In one of right view, right intention arises. In one of right intention, right speech arises. In one of right speech, right action arises. In one of right action, right livelihood arises. In one of right livelihood, right effort arises. In one of right effort, right mindfulness arises. In one of right mindfulness, right concentration arises. In one of right concentration, right knowledge arises. In one of right knowledge, right deliverance arises. Thus, monks, the disciple in higher training, possessed of eight factors, becomes an arahant when possessed of the 10 factors. The fundamental importance of right view as the forerunner is highlighted by the Buddha in some discourses. In a particular discourse in the Anguttara Nikaya, it is contrasted with the negative role of wrong view. Miccha dittikassa bhikkave purisa puggalassa yancheva kaya kammang yatha ditti samattang samadhi yancha vachi kammang yatha ditti samattang samadhi yancha mano kammang yatha ditti samattam samadhi yacha chetana yacha patthana yocha paniti yecha sankhara sambheti dhamma anitthaya akantaya amanapaya ahitaya dukkhaya sangvat tankisetu Tiddhi bhikkave pāpika. Monks, in the case of a person with wrong view, whatever bodily deed he does, accords with the view he has grasped and taken up. Whatever verbal deed he does, accords with the view he has grasped and taken up. Whatever mental deed he does, accords with the view he has grasped and taken up. Whatever intention, whatever aspiration, whatever determination, whatever preparations he makes, all those mental states conduce to unwelcome, unpleasant, unwholesome, disagreeable, and painful consequences. Why is that? The view, monks, is evil. Due to the evil nature of the view, all what follows from it partakes of an evil character. Then he gives an illustration for it. Setha bhikkave nimba bijangva posatiki bijangva titta kalabu bijangva allaya patviyani khittang chanchiva patvirasan upadhyati yancha apurasan upadhyati sabbantang titta kattaya katukattaya asatattaya sanvattati. Tankisetu bijanghi bhikkave papa. Just as monks, in the case of a magosa seed, or a bitter gourd seed, or a long gourd seed, thrown on wet ground, whatever taste of the earth it draws in, whatever taste of the water it draws in, all that conduces to bitterness, to sourness, to unpleasantness. Why is that? Seed, monks, is bad. Then he makes a similar statement with regard to right view. සම්මාදිිට්ටිකස භික්වේ පුරිස පුද්ගලස් යංචේවකායකම්මං යථාදිිට්ටි සමත්තං සමාදින්න යංචවචීකම්මං යථාදිිට්ටි සමත්තං සමාදින්න යංච මනෝකම්මං යථාදිිට්ටි සමත්තං සමාදින්න යාච චේතනා යාච පත්හනා යෝච පනිධි ඒච සංකාරා සබ්්‍යේතයේ ධම්මා ඨාය කන්තාය මනාපාය ताय सुखाय संवर्तन्ते तं किसी दिद्धि भिक्खवे बाध्यक. Monks, in the case of a person with right view, whatever bodily deed he does, accords with the view he has grasped and taken up. Whatever verbal deed he does, accords with the view he has grasped and taken up. Whatever mental deed he does, accords with the view he has grasped and taken up. Whatever intention, whatever aspiration, whatever determination, whatever preparations he makes, all those mental states conduce to welcome, pleasant, wholesome, agreeable, and happy consequences. Why is that? The view, monks, is good. Then comes the illustration for you. Setha bhikkave uccu bijangva, sali bijangva, මුද්දිකා බීජංවා අල්ලාය පටවියානිච්චිත්ත යංචීව පටවිර සංඋපාදිය යංච ආපුර සංඋපාදිය සබ්බන්තං මధుරත්තාය සහතත්තාය අසේචන කත්තාය සංවත් තං කිසේත බීජං හි භික්ඛවේ භද්ද. Just as monks, in the case of a sugar cane seedling, or sweet paddy seed, or grape seed, thrown on wet ground, whatever taste of the earth it draws in, whatever taste of the water it draws in, all that conduces to sweetness, agreeableness, and deliciousness. Why is that? The seed, monks, is excellent. This explains why the Noble Eightfold Path begins with right view. This precedence of view is not to be found in the other groups of participative factors of enlightenment. The reason for this peculiarity is the fact that view has to come first in any total transformation of personality in an individual from a psychological point of view. A view gives rise to thoughts, thoughts issue in words, words lead to actions, and actions mold a livelihood. Livelihood forms the basis for the development of other virtues on the side of meditation, namely right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So we find the precedence of right view as a unique feature in the Noble Eightfold Path. The fundamental importance of the Noble Eightfold Path could be assessed from another point of view. It gains a high degree of recognition due to the fact that the Buddha has styled it as the middle path. For instance, in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the discourse on the turning of the wheel, the middle path is explicitly defined as the Noble Eightfold Path. It is sufficiently well known that the Noble Eightfold Path has been called the middle path by the Buddha. But the basic idea behind this definition has not always been correctly understood. In the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Buddha has presented the Noble Eightfold Path as a middle path between the two extremes called Kamasukhalikana Yoga, the pursuit of sensual pleasure, and Attikilamathana Yoga, the pursuit of self-mortification. The concept of a middle might make one think that the Noble Eightfold Path is made up by borrowing 50% from each of the two extremes, the pursuit of sense pleasures and the pursuit of self-mortification. But it is not such a piecemeal solution. There are deeper implications involved. The Mahachatarishika Sutta in particular brings out the true depth of this middle path. Instead of drafting half of one extreme to half of the other, the Buddha rejected the wrong views behind both those pursuits and, avoiding the pitfalls of both, presented anew a middle path in the form of the Noble Eightfold Path. By way of clarification, we may draw attention to the fact that one inclines to the pursuit of sense pleasures by taking one's stance on the annihilationist view. It amounts to the idea that there is no rebirth and that one can indulge in sense pleasures unhindered by ethical considerations of good and evil. It inculcates a nihilistic outlook characterized by a long line of negative. In contradistinction to it, we have the affirmative standpoint, forming the lower grade of the right view to above. Namely, the right view which takes Kamma as one's own, Kammasakata Sammadit. The positive outlook in this right view inculcates moral responsibility and forms the basis for skillful or meritorious deeds. That is why it is called Punya Bhagi, on the side of merits. By implication, the nihilistic outlook, on the other hand, is on the side of demerit, lacking a basis for skillful action. In our analysis of the law of dependent arising also, we happen to mention the idea of a middle path. But that is from the philosophical standpoint. Here we are concerned with the ethical aspect of the middle path. As far as the ethical requirements are concerned, a nihilistic view by itself does not entitle one to deliverance. Why? Because the question of influxes is there to cope with. So long as the influxes of sensuality, kamasava, of becoming, bhavasava, and of ignorance, avijjasava, are there, one cannot escape the consequences of action merely by virtue of a nihilistic view. That is why the Buddha took a positive stand on those 10 postulates. Where the nihilist found an excuse for indulgence in sensuality by negating, the Buddha applied a corrective by asserting. This affirmative stance took care of one extremist trend. But the Buddha did not stop there. In the description of the higher grade of right view, we came across the terms Arya, Anasava, Lokuttara, Magganga. In the case of the lower grade, it is Sa-asava, with influxes. Here it is Anasava, influx-free. At whatever moment the mind develops that strength to withstand the influxes, one is not carried away by worldly conventions. That is why the right view at the supramundane path moment is called influx-free. There is an extremely subtle point involved in this distinction. This noble influx-free right view, that is a constituent of the supramundane path, Arya Anasava Lokuttara Magganga is oriented towards cessation, Nirodha. The right view that takes Kamma as one's own, Kammasagata Sammaditi, on the other hand, is oriented towards arising, Samudhi. Due to the fact that the right view at the path moment is oriented towards cessation, we find it qualified with the terms Viveka Nisitam, Viraga Nisitam, Nirodha Nisitam, Vasagga Parinami. Based upon seclusion, dispassion and cessation, maturing and release. It is this orientation towards Nibbana that paves the way for the signless animit, the undirected appanit, and the void sunyata. We have already discussed at length about them in our previous sermons. Perhaps while listening to them, some might have got scared at the thought, so then there is not even a mother or a father. That is why the word sunyata, voidness, drives terror into those who do not understand it properly. Here we see the depth of the Buddha's middle path. That right view within fluxes, sa-asava, is on the side of merits, punya-bhagya, not demerit, apunya. If the Buddha sanctions demerit, he could have endorsed the nihilistic view that there is no this world or the other world, no mother or father. But due to the norm of kamma, which he explained in such terms as kamma saka, satta, kamma dayada, kamma yoni, kamma bandhu, beings have kamma as their own. They are inheritors of kamma. Kamma is their matrix. Kamma is their relative. So long as ignorance and craving are there, beings take their stand on convention and go on accumulating kamma. They have to pay for it. They have to suffer the consequences. Though within fluxes, sa-asava, that right view is on the side of merit, punya-bhāga, which mature into samsāric assets, upadhi-vepak, in the form of the conditions in life conducive even to the attainment of nibbāna. That kind of right view is preferable to the nihilistic view, although it is of a second grade. But then there is the other side of the samsāric problem. One cannot afford to stagnate there. There should be a release from it as a permanent solution. That is where the higher grade of right view comes in, the noble, influxory right view, which occurs as a factor of the path. It is then that the terms animitta, signless, apanihita, the undirected, and sunyata, the void, become meaningful. When the mind is weaned away from the habit of grasping signs, from determining and from the notion of selfhood, the three doorways to deliverance, the signless, the undirected, and the void, would open up for an exit from the samsaric cycle. The cessation of existence is Nibbana, Bhavanirodho Nibbana. Here then we have the reason why the Noble Eightfold Path is called the middle path. In the life of a meditator also, the concept of a middle path could sometimes give rise to doubts and indecision. One might wonder whether one should strive hard or lead a comfortable life. A midway solution between the two might be taken as the middle path. But the true depth of the middle path emerges from the above analysis of the twofold definition of the Noble Eightfold Path. It is because of this depth of the middle path that the Buddha made the following declaration in the Aggappasada Sutta of the Anguttara Nikaya. Yavata bhikkave dhamma sankhata ariyo attangiko maggo tesang aggang akkhari. Monks, whatever prepared things there are, the Noble Eightfold Path is called the highest among them. It is true that the Noble Eightfold Path is something prepared, and that is why we showed its relation to causes and conditions. Whatever is prepared is not worthwhile, and yet it is by means of this prepared Noble Eightfold Path that the Buddha clears the path to the unprepared. This is an extremely subtle truth which only a Buddha can discover and proclaim to the world. It is not easy to discover it, because one tends to confuse issues by going to one extreme or another. One either resorts to the annihilationist view and ends up by giving way to indulgence in sensuality, or inclines towards the eternalist view and struggles to extricate self by self-mortification. In the Dhamma proclaimed by the Buddha, one can see a marvelous middle way. We have already pointed it out in earlier sermons by means of such illustrations as sharpening a razor. There is a remarkable attitude of non-grasping about the middle path, which is well expressed by the term atammayata, non-identification. Relying on one thing is just for the purpose of eliminating another, as exemplified by the simile of the relay of chariots. The key terms signifying the aim and purpose of this middle path are viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, vasagga parinama. Based upon seclusion, dispassion and cessation, maturing in release. Placed in this samsaric predicament, one cannot help resorting to certain things to achieve this aim. But care is taken to see that they are not grasped or clung to. It is a process of pushing away one thing with another, and that with yet another. We are media based on relativity and pragmatism. The Noble Eightfold Path marks the consummation of this process, its systematic fulfillment. That is why we try to trace a process of a gradual development among the 37 participative factors of enlightenment. Even the internal arrangement within each group is extraordinary. There is an orderly arrangement from beginning to end in an ascending order of importance. Sometimes an analysis could start from the middle and extend to either side. Some groups portray a gradual development towards a climax. The Noble Eightfold Path is exceptionally striking in that it indicates how a complete transformation of personality could be effected by putting right view at the head as the forerunner. Perhaps the most impressive among discourses in which the Buddha highlighted the pervasive significance of the Noble Eightfold Path is the Akasa Sutta, Sky Sutta, in the Magga Samyutta of the Sanghita Nikaya. Just as monks, various winds blow in the sky. Easterly winds, westerly winds, northerly winds, southerly winds, dusty winds, dustless winds, cold winds and hot winds, gentle winds and strong winds. So too, when a monk develops and cultivates the Noble Eightfold Path, for him, the four foundations of mindfulness go to fulfillment by development. The four right efforts go to fulfillment by development. The four bases for success go to fulfillment by development. The five spiritual faculties go to fulfillment by development. The five powers go to fulfillment by development. The seven factors of enlightenment go to fulfillment by development. All these go to fulfillment by development only when the Noble Eightfold Path is developed in the way described above. Namely, based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. Viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, vasagga parinama. That is to say, with Nibbana as the goal of endeavor, then none of the preceding categories go astray. They all contribute to the perfection and fulfillment of the Noble Eightfold Path. They are all enshrined in it. So well-knitted and pervasive is the Noble Eightfold Path. Another discourse of paramount importance, which illustrates the pervasive influence of the Noble Eightfold Path, is the Mahasarayatanika Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. The other Buddha shows us how all the other enlightenment factors are included in the Noble Eightfold Path. In our discussion on Nibbana, we happen to mention that the cessation of the six sense spheres is Nibbana. If Nibbana is the cessation of the six sense spheres, it should be possible to lay down a way of practice leading to Nibbana through the six sense spheres themselves. As a matter of fact, there is such a way of practice, and this is what the Mahasarayatanika Sutta presents in summary form. In this discourse, the Buddha first portrays how on the one hand the samsaric suffering arises depending on the sixfold sense sphere. Then he explains how on the other hand the suffering could be ended by means of a practice pertaining to the sixfold sense sphere itself. Chakkhum bhikkhave ajānaṁ apassaṁ yathābhūt rūpe ajānaṁ apassaṁ yathābhūt chakkhu viññānaṁ ajānaṁ apassaṁ yathābhūtam චක්කු සම්පස්සං අජානං අපස්සං යථාභූත යම්පිදං චක්කු සම්පස්ස පච්චය උප්පජ්ජති වේදිතං සුඛං වා දුක්ඛං වා අදුක්ඛම සුඛං වා තම්පි අජානං අපස්සං යථාභූත චක්කුස්මින් සාරජ්ජති රූපේසු සාරජ්ජති චක්කු විඥානේ සාරජ්ජති චක්කු සම්පස්සේ සාරජ්ජති යම්පිදං චක්කු සම්පස්ස පච්චය උප්පජ්ජති වේදිතං සුඛං වා දුක්ඛං වා අදුක්ඛම සුඛං වා තස්මින්පි සාරජ තස්ස සාරත්තස්ස සංයුත්තස්ස සම්මූලස්ස අස්සාදානුපසිනෝ විහෙරතෝ ආයතින් පංචපාදානක්ඛන්ධා උපචයං ගච්ඡanti තන්නාචස්ස පූණෝ භවිකා නන්දි රාග සාගතං తත්‍ර తත්‍රාදි නන්දිනී සාචස්ස පවද්දති తස්ස කායිකාපි දර්ථා පවද්ධಂತಿ චේතසිකාපි දර්ථා පවද්ධಂತಿ කායිකාපි සංතාපාප වඩ්ඩಂತಿ චේතසිකාපි සංතාපාප වඩ්ඩಂತಿ කායිකාපි පරිලාහාප වඩ්ඩಂತಿ චේතසිකාපි පරිලාහාප වඩ්ඩಂತಿ සෝ කාය දුක්ඛම්පි චේතෝ දුක්ඛම්පි පටිසංවේදී. Monks, not knowing and not seeing the eye as it actually is, not knowing and not seeing forms as they actually are, not knowing and not seeing eye consciousness as it actually is, not knowing and not seeing eye contact as it actually is, whatever is felt as present or unpresent, or neither unpresent nor present, arising dependent on eye contact, not knowing and not seeing that too as it actually is, one gets lustfully attached to the eye, to forms, to eye consciousness, to eye contact, and whatever is felt as present, or unpresent, or neither unpresent nor present, arising independence on eye contact. And for him who is lustfully attached, fettered, infatuated, contemplating gratification, the five aggregates of grasping get accumulated for the future and is craving, which makes for re-becoming, which is accompanied by delight and lust. Delighting now here, now there, also increases. His bodily stresses increase. His mental stresses increase. His bodily torments increase. His mental torments increase. His bodily fevers increase. His mental fevers increase. And he experiences bodily and mental suffering. In this way, the Buddha first of all delineates how the entire samsaric suffering arises in connection with the sixfold sense sphere. We will discuss the rest of the discourse in our next sermon.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.